Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to Wood Talk, turning woodworkers into knitters since 2007. Here are your hosts, Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
All right, what's happening, everybody? It's show number five.
Mark.
I was talking to you.
I was talking
to them.
I don't see anybody.
There's nobody else here. You must be talking to me.
Stop talking to your plants.
Okay. You're talking to
on
me.
On today's show, we're talking about hard versus soft sanding pads, the purpose of a shave hook, PVA glue life, emotional projects, cabinets with drawers, and practice pieces at a pine. Man, I'm hungry, so we better make all of that go fast, you guys.
All right.
All right. But before we get to that, I want to let you know that this show is proudly supported by you and some crappy ads, but also mostly by you. And Matt's going to tell you how you can help us out.
Yes, I am, Mark. All of you, whoever you are listening to this, if you want to help support the show, you can do so. You can go to patreon.com/woodtalk and sign up to become a patron of the show. This time, we're thanking a whole slew of awesome people. Mm-hmm. And we're all going to take turns reading a whole bunch of names. Here I go. Thank you to Greg Lewandowski, Devin Perkins, John Doolittle, Don Richardson at Chief Woodworks, Kevin McNeil, William Segrist, Kyle Slattery, Neil Becker, Harry Benson, Courage White, Brad Bowers, Gerald Anania. I don't know. TJ, Jim Weisgram, Roberto Polianti, Dan Galbraith, Michael Monahan, Simon Stevens, John Hayden.
All right, and we're thanking Matt Higgins, Bram Barrett, David Caldwell, Paul, Ken Coyle, DJ Chrisman, Chris Wilson, Jack Konesberg, Greg Marwitz, Daniel Cook, Nate at the Workshop of Stuff, Joey Cantrell, Jacob Reich, Nabil, Aaron Wolf, Michael Thompson, Justin Caponia, Jonathan Hartford, Thomas Preventure, Sarah Barrett, Lars Grimm, and Chris Luke.
And Matthew Warren, Yukiko, Josh Duplin, and Dustin Darkwater, Chris Houlette, Gerald Kulik, Jordan Chrysler, Zoros. Theron Rush, Steve McDougal, Come Drop Moncrief.
That's awesome.
That could be someone's given name, and we're laughing.
I love it. John Glavazich, Will Brown, Justin Hayes, Chris Van Buren, Jeff Ardacus Maximus, Laura Ambrose, Ryan Luvas, David McCloskey, John Hemby, Brian Jovag, and Justin Moffitt. Like the little forklift.
To this later. Like, I want to listen Moffitt. To this with my eyes closed because I'm sure some of those names have to be
definitely.
Yeah, just I'm not hearing it. Like, wow. Well, hey, thank you everybody. Again, this is probably, I want to say hopefully, because I really appreciate the support, but I know listening to all the names there can be a pain, unless it's your name. So if it bothers you and you're not a Patreon supporter, head over there. Check it out. Yeah. You'll get your name read and annoy other people with your name.
It's kind of fun. I'm kind of jealous of Matt that he gets to do that all the time.
right? Isn't it? It's a good time. All right, we're going to dive right into questions. We got some questions because you guys ask them. We'd like to answer them. And one here is from David about sander backing pads on Random Orbit Sanders. He says, I'm going to be finishing kitchen cabinets this summer. I'm getting my first Random Orbit Sander, my first Festool. Attaboy. Do I need to worry about getting hard or softer backing pad?
Oh, boy.
What? I'm just reading the question as written.
Just go ahead. Read that bad boy.
Okay. Or is the standard soft what I need? All right. So he also says, love the show. Thank you, David. Appreciate that. So the pads on not every sander can you replace the pad, but certainly on the Festool, you've got quite a variety of pads that you can add. Now, I like to have both in the shop because I'm spoiled. I like the standard pad. Actually, I say both. All three. I have a standard pad, which is really, it's as intended. It's a good general purpose pad. It's going to do most things pretty well. They also make a hard pad, which is going to be a lot firmer if you are tempted to do things like sand a 3/4 inch edge, which I sometimes am to speed things up. That hard pad makes that process a lot easier. I don't really do it. I mean, I'll use it just because it's the sander that's near me and I am lazy, so I'll pick that one up. But if I'm sanding flat surfaces, I usually don't go with the hard pad. There's really no reason to. Usually like a tabletop or something like that. You don't need that dead flat sort of thing that might help you attain. Usually a softer one is going to follow any little minor imperfections in the surface, which is kind of what you want at that stage when we're talking about just finish prep. So I use the regular one for most things, the hard one for things like edges. And then I do have the softer backing pad, which actually is the least useful to me. But I think if you're doing, I don't know, sculptural things that you're just trying to sand and kind of maybe do a little bit of light shaping with the recess in a seat, you know, something like that, you might want the softer backing pad. But I like the idea of having, even with one sander, you can have them both. It's very quick to swap them out, change between the hard and the standard. And I think that will serve you pretty well. You guys can interject, but it'll just make the show longer.
No, everything I know about sanding pads, I learned from you, Mark.
All right, good. And then subsequently forgot it all.
Pretty much.
Because you don't need those.
And then I sold them, but that's all right.
Yeah.
All right. I leave the hard pad on, and that's the only thing I use. Okay.
Just the hard. No kidding.
Just the hard.
Okay.
I don't do sculptural stuff very often, so I don't really have to get into anything.
Hold on. Title. It's coming now. Matt prefers it.
Hard.
Hard.
Firm.
No, it's hard.
Okay. This stuff just writes itself. Really.
It just happens automatically.
I
mean,
it just showed up on my screen. I don't know what happened. It literally wrote itself.
All right, Matt, you're up.
All right, it's from Jeffrey. When building cabinets with drawers, I've seen some builders include a horizontal piece between each level of drawers and attached to the carcass on either end, usually with pocket screws. This seems to serve as an additional attachment point for the face frame. Other builders seem to skip this step entirely, depending on the undermount drawer glides to attach the face frame and provide support for the face frame. I'm wondering, in what situations do you include the additional dividers between the drawers? Thank you all, and never tire of listening and learning. This is, I guess, somewhat timely because I'm doing this. And I am including those little pieces behind all of the horizontal dividers between all the drawers for the only purpose of providing more support to my face frame. Mm-hmm. So if someone pushes into it, it doesn't deflect and crack the paint along the stiles. Oh. That's the main reason I'm doing it. It has.
Are we talking about drawer blades?
Yes, but on like cabinetry. So like, not the kind you're thinking of.
Oh, I see what you... Okay, got it.
Face
frame?
Yeah,
so it's more of like a face frame. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It's a face frame backer at that point. I'm sure there's like other weird reasons to do it depending on your drawer slides. Mine, I put all of my case sides flush to the openings so I don't have to fur my undermount slides anywhere or attach them with those back brackets or anything. They just mount like... They mount just like side mount slides because they're just going right to the side of the case. And I think the only other consideration would be like what style of drawer you're doing. If you're doing like an overlay, probably less chance someone's going to like actually put pressure directly on the divider on the face frame somehow. But I'm doing inset, so like that whole divider is fully exposed and can get like run into, or someone's swinging a pot around and smacks the cabinet, you know, things you do in the kitchen, stuff like that.
Sure.
So, it's what do what you want. And it's a good way to get rid of scraps.
Well, there you go. You may
I
as
like
well.
That part.
And it's just pocket hold in, right? It's not too much trouble.
No, it's not. It's pocket. I pocket hold to the case, the carcass, and then to the face frame.
Yeah. Okay.
Nice.
Do what you want.
It's a question from Chris. He says, what is the purpose of a shave hook? And more importantly, how do I sharpen one? Now, I got to admit, I'd never heard the term shave hook before. And I had to read his question further to find out what it was. And then I Googled it. And turns out I'm the only one who's never heard it called as a shave hook, because that's apparently what it's called. I've always called it a paint scraper. It's those triangular things scraper. On a stick, basically.
Yeah.
Little like spear thing that's at a perpendicular to the stick. He says, what little information I've been able to find suggests that this tool was originally used for scraping old finishes off of moldings and doors and other non-flat surfaces that in the present day, they're used mostly for removing old paint in conjunction with a heat gun. In either case, some sort of edge must be put onto the blade. So should you treat it like a card scraper, raise a burr, or sharpen it as you would a chisel or plane iron? Third suggestion I found was to grind it on a grinding wheel or with a mill file, which creates a rough bevel on the backside. Wow. That's a lot of reasons. That sounds like the internet right there. Most of them, because you can find vintage versions of these, and I guess that's why those are really called shave hooks, or you can go to Lowe's and buy a paint scraper. They all tend to have a bevel on them, but you will also find some that have like a 90 degree face. The bevel is 90 degrees, and it's that sharp aris of 90 degrees that you're actually using to scrape. That's going to be a heck of a lot more durable because you've got such a steep bevel angle, but obviously probably not as keen or not as sharp as something that would have more of a bevel on it. So if it has a bevel, you're getting down to that more acute angle, and you're going to get that kind of sharper feel to it and probably be able to get into tighter crevices. If you have a 90 degree turn, you may not be able to get right into an inside corner of something like that. What I would do, your clue is the shave hook. I almost called it a shave horse. The shave hook that you have in your hand should be your guide. If that hook already has a bevel on it, then you want to sharpen it as you would, I say, as a chisel or a plane blade. If it's got a 90 degree face on it, then you just want to sharpen that 90 degree face. Or if it's really beat up, you might need to sharpen the adjacent face to get that sharp 90 degree angle. I would not put a burr on these things because now that may come off as more aggressive, but what you're probably going to do is start scraping the wood underneath the paint, unless that's what you want to do. But ultimately, most of these are used to try to preserve. You're pulling paint off of, let's just say it's restoring a door or something, and it's got some sort of overload molding in there. If you start pulling the wood off, you're going to start deforming that shape. The burr is going to have a tendency to want to do that. I also find that it's going to be kind of sticky. It's going to be a little bit harder to get in there. If you think about it, if you're trying to get right into an inside corner and you're trying to get that burr to engage, you might get a little too aggressive too quickly in that really, really fine detail. Just having that beveled edge is probably going to end up treating you a lot better. But as with most things, it may depend heavily upon the situation, on how nasty or aggressive that finish is, or possibly what that profile is you're trying to shape. But rely upon the existing shape of the tool to guide you, and try to avoid the burr as much as possible. I would call that your last resort option if you really can't get things to pull up, can't get the paint to be removed or something like that. Or glue.
Yeah,
I have one that I use for glue.
Yeah, they're good for glue. Definitely depends on the use case. There are times where I've done this and I had paint to scrape off, and I had a lot of paint to scrape off. That means there's no way in hell I'm actually going to hone that. I'm hitting it with a file, with a hand file, and I'm putting an edge on it, and I'm doing that like every 5 minutes until I'm down.
And that's the thing. The burr is going to be a lot more fragile than the beveled edge or the 90 degree edge. That burr is going to deform fast. Paint is paint's nasty.
Well, the funny thing is with this question is, what is the purpose? And more importantly, how do I sharpen one? And I think both of those are tied together. What you're doing with it and what the purpose will dictate how you sharpen it. So it's very use case dependent. We're going to take a quick break and pause for a little bit of commercial interruption.
Let's go out to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Have ourselves a snack.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So we got some questions here, some more questions, I should say. First one is from Josh about PVA glue life. He says, during the pandemic, I purchased a gallon of Type Bond 2, envisioning countless woodworking projects in my future. Fast forward 4 years, amidst the whirlwind of pursuing a master's degree, my woodworking pace unfortunately took a backseat. However, as my MBA journey nears completion, I am eager to return to the wood shop. Surprisingly, I still have about a half gallon of glue left. I wonder if it's still good to use or if I should consider starting fresh. The glue maintains the usual viscosity and shows no signs of discoloration. Well, that's good. That's a real good sign. So there is an article that you can find on Type Bond's website. Let me see if I can look that up. Type Bond Shelf Life. There it is. No, that's not the one. I'll find a link. Bottom line is, if it still flows and you don't see solids in there, generally that means it's probably still good. What you're going to find is with another... hey, you guys settle down. All right? Too many freeze-thaw cycles are problematic. Too much heat exposure, hot summers, that's problematic.
Oh, yeah.
And what'll happen is it'll get gummy, and as you go to pour it out, you might see it just like, it'll like a whole glop will come out. If you don't see any of that stuff and it still seems pretty good, it's probably okay to use. If you're not sure, grab some scrap wood, glue two pieces together, let it cure, and then see if you can pull them apart. But chances are, I mean, anytime I've thrown glue out, it's because I almost can't pour it out of the bottle. Like, yeah. Stuff's definitely not happy inside there. And it becomes pretty obvious when you see that. So if you have perfectly flowing material in the bottle, I say go ahead and just use it. And I think the article I'll link to, which while someone else is answering a question, I'm going to look it up and put it in the show notes so you could reference it, will also support what I'm saying here.
I'm just going to say, I just looked it up. A gallon of Type Bond 2 is $25. If you're not certain,
doesn't matter.
Just go buy some new stuff. And
no, listen,
don't buy it by the gallon. That was my mistake. I bought a gallon of it and I had in the same situation where I just didn't use enough glue. I just buy it by the, well, I mean, because here's the other thing is like, generally you end up pouring that gallon into some other container. Because just the gallon thing is just cumbersome to use. So just buy a smaller container and I guess I'm the one without kids, so I can afford to go buy me some glue any old time.
Yeah, look at you, Mr. Moneybags.
Mr. Spindy over here.
Matt's buying, you know, Wolf appliances. I'm buying lights from Matt. I mean, some of us don't have money here.
That's true.
Throwback to the last show. Actually,
rich in glue, baby. Rich in glue.
Want me to read this real quick? So this is from Type Bond on Type Bond's website. Most adhesive manufacturers stamp an official shelf life on products to limit liability in case of poor storage conditions causing product failure. The stated shelf life of wood glue typically is 1 or 2 years. However, the expected shelf life of many glues typically stretches well past those few years. For example, store a bottle of white or yellow wood glue in optimum conditions and it can last 10 years or longer. Bob Benke, senior technical specialist. I've talked to Bob. He's a good guy. At Type Bond, says dry cool basement is an ideal place to keep wood glues. He adds that you might be able to extend the life of your glue even longer if you put it in your refrigerator. This is a quote. The worst storage conditions allow freezing and then thawing and heat. Most wood glues are designed to withstand a minimum of 5 freeze-thaw cycles. With each cycle, the glue forms gels. Mixing easily breaks up these gels, but each subsequent freeze-thaw incident will make the gels more difficult to disperse. Eventually, you won't be able to break up the gels at all, and the glue will remain solid. Heat can also cause the polymer to clump and gel. How you will know if your glue has gone bad? If it pours, it's probably good, says Benke. If the glue has thickened, shake it vigorously by firmly tapping the bottle on a hard surface until the product is restored to its original form. You could also add up to 5% of water to water-based glues, such as PVA glues, to thin the product. If the glue comes out stringy or pasty or wants to stick to itself rather than to the wood, it's probably past its prime. And if Type Bond 2 turns orange, it's time for a new bottle. Huh. There you go.
Oh, I wish it started orange.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
Maybe a more fun color.
A little food color in there. No problem.
There you go.
All right.
Just add some dye.
Way to go, Bill Binky.
Okay, so I think the next two are group questions, but you guys, I put your names next to them if you want to read them.
This is from Jeremy. He says, I have a question for the show, but I also have no friends. And I wanted to share this Madrone burl I got and resawed. It looks incredible. And he sent a picture, and I agree, it does look incredible. He says, have you ever gotten emotional over a project or technique? I was working on a jewelry box and I came up with an idea for the lid and how it would sit on the box. Long story short, I pulled it off exactly as was envisioned and it made me a bit emotional because I was so happy I pulled it off. To be transparent, I'm very new to the craft and had not attempted anything like it and didn't bother to look for help. Love the show. Thanks for your time. Hell yeah. I think especially when you came up with a solution yourself. Actually, Jeremy, the worst thing you can do is not go on the internet, because then you realize that you weren't the first one to come up with it. And you're like, yeah. Oh man, now I don't feel so great about myself. Or right. Now you start second guessing because somebody else did it, but did it a different way. No, hell yeah. Anytime you pull something off and it actually comes out like you envision it in your head, mm-hmm. that is a moment for rejoicing, whether it's a square edge on a board or, a book match veneer or whatever. It's those little triumphs in woodworking that keep bringing me back. I have definitely gotten emotional over a well-executed joint or finishing a project and having it. Every now and then you don't make a mistake. Mm-hmm. And you don't spend 20% cleaning up your mistakes. It actually just comes out and you're like, hey, I'm kind of good at this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Elation is common. I don't really know if there's many emotions beyond that. I mean, I can get pissed once in a while if something doesn't go right. But I'm pretty level-headed with that stuff. For me, the most satisfaction comes from making something I didn't think I could. And as silly as Matt, you're doing tons of cabinets. I'm intimidated by built-ins. It's just something that I haven't done a lot of in my career. I didn't have a lot of experience with people who actually know how to do it. So a lot of the tips and tricks, I got to learn those or practice them and manually get there. So something like Nicole's closet, certainly not one of the most technical projects I've ever done or the most beautiful things I've ever done, but it may be in recent years, one of the things that made me feel the best. Cause I'm like, yeah, I just did that. I made that thing for my wife and she loves it and it's great. And I didn't think I would be able to do it. And I saved myself a lot of money by actually building it myself. So yeah, that's when I get the most elation, is when I actually go, holy crap, I can't believe I pulled that off. I mean, Matt, you got to look at this kitchen and be thinking that's pretty substantial.
Yeah, you got to be looking at your great room ceiling. Yeah, that's what I would look at. That ceiling.
Don't look over there.
With all the compounded errors, the fact that you pulled
don't
that off.
Don't look over there, please. Don't look in there.
Don't look too close.
I have to see them every day. It drives me crazy.
But I imagine once this kitchen is done and you get to wake up, you fry up the bacon, you use that bacon to make the pancakes like you do, right? The healthy way.
Yes.
And, there's going to be some serious satisfaction going across your face when that finally happens.
I mean, there already is. Every time I'm in the room, I see all the progress from everything that's happened. From the sunroom not even being there, that was a deck that I excavated and we've poured the foundation for and framed it.
Right.
Put all those windows in evenly spaced all the way around. And then I made and installed the whole flooring in there, which looks amazing. I'm really happy with the floor that's in there, which I did. I did all the trim in the sunroom, which was a huge undertaking in itself. It was more trim than I've ever done my entire life in that one room. And now I'm getting into the cabinets where I'm like, okay, this is kind of tangentially woodworking, kind of like trim is, but there's still all this nuance and weird things that I'm doing there that I don't have any experience with.
Yeah.
So it's been quite an interesting learning experience over the last couple of years of I was pretty focused on sawmills and wood and furniture making. That was what I knew and understood. Now I'm okay, now I have a good, better understanding of carpentry and, finished carpentry and cabinetry making and stuff. So all the things that people call us all the time, they were no, that's not really
the wrong terms.
It's not quite right. But now at least I feel I've done those things. I have some understanding of those things. So at least, my gradient of things I can do is expanding.
Yeah. And when we use some of the same tools, but they're still very different disciplines.
Yeah. I mean, I think your sawmill brings up a point too. Anytime I've made a tool or anytime I've encountered a problem and made a jig or made the solution to the tool, that's cool. That's like one of those moments where like, yeah, that's right. I did that. Like had a problem and I built the solution at the same time. Yeah.
Right.
Or especially when I have a problem and I realize that I've already built the solution. Mm-hmm. It's like, I knew there was a reason I built that shooting board or something like that. And you find that it's already there. You're like, yep, that's right. I knew what I was doing 10 years ago.
Right.
Good stuff.
I have plenty of examples of elation, but I think the building the sawmill was like, it's probably the top one. And you're like, I don't really know how to build anything out of steel, but I have an idea and let's see if this works. And then like, it's on the internet the whole time. So I had plenty of people tell me it wouldn't work the whole time, which is extremely frustrating too. A lot of people like, it's funny because like you just like see like you're focused on the negativity all the time, even though it's like 1,000 people are like so excited for you and think it's going to work just fine. But like 3 people are like, this is dumb. This is never going to work.
Mm-hmm.
I just focus on that the whole time.
Turns like, out all most of the internet is full of shit, Matt.
I'm all about like, I got to prove these people wrong.
Yeah. And you did.
And I did. Fortunately, somehow.
Yeah. Against all odds.
Against all odds. Against all 3 of them.
All 3 of those. 3 Take out of that. Thousands. Nice. All right, Matt, I think you got the last one for today.
Yes, this is from Joe P. Practice pieces from pine. Your question, I have adopted the habit of building a practice piece out of the cheapest pine I could find before starting on the more expensive hardwood version. Have you folks ever done this? I'm starting to find the softwoods just don't behave well, or at least don't behave as the hard species do. Am I wasting my time? Thanks. I think I did this in the beginning. I had the same realization. I'm like, this is not comparable to what I'm going to be working with anyway. So unless I'm like, I got to figure out some shapes or something, maybe I might do this, but otherwise, no, I don't really do this.
Yeah. I think it greatly depends on what you're building the prototype for. So if you're doing it because you want to practice dovetails,
no,
well, it's not going to saw, it's not going to chisel the same way as hardwood. It's going to give you a very unrealistic and inaccurate
if you can, but on the other hand, if you can do it in pine,
yeah,
it's you can true. Do it anywhere.
Yeah. You can do it in maple easily.
Yes, it's way easier.
Except for you get that, like in pine, you get that, you know, smash with a hammer to fit and things don't break apart as
easily.
That's
true, too. You do have some nice compression action going on.
A little bit
there
more
too.
Forgiving in that way.
You tend to get rust on your tools, too, from Home Depot pine because of all the water.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, it's all wet.
Well, every hit, you just get a little squirt in the eye. But the thing with like prototypes for me, it's going to be more about proportions, shape, maybe comfort. You know, if I'm building a seat of some kind, that would be the time when I would say, I don't care if it warps as I'm cutting it. I'm just going to screw these 2 things together and see, how does this feel? Does it have the clearance I'm looking for? I had to do this recently with my brother's table. I wasn't 100% sure about how the angles were going to impact a piece of joinery. So I had, I didn't use pine. I had a couple pieces of cherry. So I used some cherry thinking like, maybe I'll make another one of these tables. I'll hang on to this if it works out. And it was helpful. It was really helpful to see this thing, you know, in space and determine what I need to do with it. But then I went back to the walnut to, finish it. But I don't normally get a chance to do that just because of the way work goes for me. Mm-hmm. I just like run and gun and hopefully it works out. I wish I had the time to make prototypes for every project.
I don't have the patience for that.
It's tough. Well, do you have the time to be like, enough time to build the project, let alone to build the project the first time and see how it goes. I think that's going to do it for us today. Remember, the show is made possible by the generous contributions of our patrons. And if you'd like to help out and get your name read on the show, also you get an ad-free version of the show. You can head over to patreon.com/woodtalk.
That's right. And you can subscribe to the ad-free RSS feed right there. But, you know, don't forget, we have a video version of this show on YouTube as well.
That's right.
And you get to see us. And then you cancel your Patreon support because you just saw us. So maybe don't do that. But yeah, no, I hear from people all the time. I just started doing the same thing with the Lumber Update podcast. And it's surprising how many people want to watch us talk at a camera. So yeah, if you're into that, go to our YouTube channel and watch that as well. But in the meantime, send us more questions because we just answered a whole bunch of them and we probably only have like 300 or 400 in the inbox left. So quickly send us an email at woodtalkshow@gmail.com or just go to woodtalkshow.com. There's a contact form there you can use. We'd love to hear your questions. We want to keep the show relevant to you. So send us your questions. No question too small, no question too dumb, based on what we just answered today, right?
Oh, man. Jeez. Okay.
I hadn't insulted anybody in a while. We took a break, so I got to gear back up.
We're back.
We're back to insulting people.
Like and abrasive as ever.
That's right. All right. Well, thank you for listening. Thank you for your support, everybody. We really appreciate
Seriously,
it.
We will. You guys rock.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Like to see that. And we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.